a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
I can't get them both on. The South Dakota Senate Transportation Committee will come to order. First thing I want to do is welcome everyone to the committee hearing this morning and also welcome those that are on the internet. First reminder, obviously, is to silence your cell phones. It's a good move to make for all of us. That includes me. So in the process of turning mine off here. At this point, I'll have the secretary call the roll.
Senators. Krebs?
Here.
Lucas?
Here.
Monroe?
Here.
Amdahl?
Here.
Otten? Ewing?
Here.
Valley?
Here.
A quorum is present?
We have a quorum, and we have a full committee this morning. The chairman would entertain a motion on the minutes that are appearing in your book.
Second.
Been moved by Senator Otten, seconded by Senator Amdahl to approve the minutes as written. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The minutes are approved as written. Got a couple pages here, and these are new pages. So if you'll come up to the microphone and just tell us who you are and where you're from, and then what you're going to do with the rest of your life once you leave Pier here.
I'm Jenny Palmer. I'm from here in Pier, and I plan on either going to Montana State University or University of St. Thomas to major in business management.
All right.
And I'm Sunny Gahn. I'm from Chamberlain, South Dakota, and I plan on majoring in international politics, and I haven't decided on a school yet.
Wow, international politics. Well, Chamberlain is a good place to come from. I happen to know I graduated from there, so good place to come from. I'm going to remind the pages that, and anyone else here that has something to hand out to please give it to the pages and they'll hand it out behind the desk. And at this point, anything to come before the committee? We have three bills today. We got a new one that came across yesterday. We may get a few more from the House side because we all know it's crossover day here tomorrow. But anyway, we've got plenty of time. We have six bills, so we're going to take up three of them today. And then we're going to move to take up the probably the other three the following day. We'll see what comes. And just so everyone is aware, I also then the last couple days probably – at least one session, open it back up to our hearings that we were talking about transportation and what do we want to do in the future for road transportation issues so that we can bring up something for next year's session. And with that, we'll start out with House Bill 1036. Will the presenters of that please come forward and identify yourself and proceed? Welcome, Mr. Nevin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, good morning. Bill Nevin for the Department of Transportation. Under the Highway Beautification Act, which is 23 U.S.C. Section 131, every state in the nation is required to provide effective control of outdoor advertising devices in conformance with federal regulations. South Dakota implements those federal requirements through the outdoor advertising control provisions of SDCL Chapter 31-29. Among those effective controls set out in the regulations is that, subject to certain requirements and unless grandfathered in, outdoor advertising devices are limited to commercial or industrial areas that are either zoned or zoned as part of a comprehensive zoning action, or in cases where land is not zoned, the land is actually being used for commercial or industrial purposes. With respect to zoning for outdoor advertising control purposes, Federal Regulation 23 CFR 750-708B provides the following criterion in determining effective control. State and local zoning actions must be taken pursuant to the state zoning enabling statute, or a constitutional authority and in accordance therewith. However, action which is not part of a comprehensive zoning and is created primarily to permit outdoor advertising structures is not recognized as zoning for outdoor advertising control purposes. Federal Highway Administration issued a formal opinion several years ago interpreting that regulation and concluded that there's a difference between legitimate commercial and industrial zones, and limited purpose areas created primarily to allow outdoor advertising. Even actions that are facially part of comprehensive zoning, but in fact are merely schemes to allow outdoor advertising in rural or residential areas, are not accepted by Federal Highway as lawful zoning for purposes of control of outdoor advertising. In 1967, the South Dakota legislature originally enacted its statutory scheme to comply with the federal requirements. Among those statutes, what was then SDCL 3129-20 created a state-zoned commercial strip 660 feet wide along either side of virtually every federal aid highway in the state so as to allow billboards anywhere along those corridors. The U.S. Department of Transportation subsequently determined that that kind of zoning, strip zoning, for the purpose of authorizing outdoor advertising devices did not constitute effective control of outdoor advertising devices as required by federal regulations, and as a result, they withheld 10% of our federal highway funds. At that time, it was that 10% amounted to about $3.36 million. The state appealed administratively and lost, and then sued in federal court to challenge USDOT's determination and hopefully get the highway money back. That case was State of South Dakota versus Volt, Secretary of Transportation. It's a 1973 decision. South Dakota argued that the purpose for zoning a commercial corridor for billboards was to promote economic development, to serve the public, stimulate tourism and commerce, and for planning the general growth of the state's economy. As you may know, South Dakota lost that case. In holding against the state, the federal court quoted from the congressional record during the passage of the Highway Beautification Act. And I quote, "When state or local governments act to zone areas for commercial or industrial purposes in accordance with traditional exercise of authority on zoning, those determinations will be accepted for purposes of billboard or junkyard control." This language, of course, does not mean that a state or local authority could place a label zoned commercial or industrial on land adjacent to the interstate or primary systems solely to permit billboards or junkyards and thereby frustrate the intent of Congress stated in Section 131. Because that strip zoning by the state was held not to constitute lawful zoning for purposes of the Federal Highway Beautification Act, even though the zoning was properly enacted in accordance with zoning laws, we didn't get the money back. However, we did change the law. That statute was subsequently repealed as part of a rewrite of our outdoor advertising control laws designed to bring us into compliance and avoid the continued loss of additional federal funds. One of those statutes enacted to conform our South Dakota laws to the federal court decision implementing that zoning requirement is SDCL 3129-71.8, which sets forth three criteria a zoned commercial or industrial area must meet to be acceptable for outdoor advertising control purposes. The first criterion in subparagraph 1 provides the zone is lawfully enacted by the local government unit. Consistent with the federal regulation and the federal court case, the Department of Transportation has since that time interpreted and applied that provisions in the billboard permitting process so as to prohibit spot or strip zoning for the primary purpose of permitting billboards, thereby conforming to the federal regulation. The United States Department of Transportation, through the Federal Highway Administration, in reviewing South Dakota's compliance with the federal requirements, agrees with our interpretation and has approved our statutory scheme for providing effective outdoor advertising control. However, over the course of the past year, a question was raised about whether the language of that statute was vague and whether it actually prohibited spot zoning for purposes of getting a billboard permit or simply required that the general legal procedure and zoning statutes for adopting a zoning change was followed in order to be lawful zoning for purposes of outdoor advertising control. The intent of House Bill 1036 is to address that issue. The purpose of this bill is to clarify that zoning done not as part of a comprehensive zoning plan, but rather primarily for the purpose of creating a billboard site, does not constitute lawful zoning for purposes of outdoor advertising control. While the procedural mechanics for adopting a zoning change may well have been followed by the local government unit, for purposes of effective outdoor advertising control, it is not considered lawful zoning. We believe this bill accomplishes that clarification of the lawful zoning criterion of SDCL 3129.71.81 by adding language that parrots the federal regulation in accordance with that court decision in State v. Volpe. That is, that zoning done primarily for the purpose of obtaining a billboard permit is not lawful zoning for purposes of billboard regulation. How does one know if the primary purpose is a billboard permit? Well, like any such legal determination, you have to look at all the facts and circumstances of a particular billboard permit application. If someone submits a billboard permit application, people are going to look at whether there's proper zoning as part of comprehensive zoning. And if the location in question was not zoned either commercial or industrial as part of a comprehensive zoning action, then it's considered not zoned, and we would look at it as if it were unzoned property. In that case, the federal guidelines call for us to look at various factors to determine whether the actual use being made of the land is commercial or industrial, so as to still be a potential lawful billboard site. And among the things we look at is what are the actual land uses in the area? Talk to local planning and zoning officials about the intent. Are there the existence of any development plans on the property? Are utilities sufficient to enable commercial or industrial development available? Are access roads sufficient for commercial or industrial activities available or planned? And of course, in the case where zoning has changed, what was the expressed purpose for rezoning? Those are some of the factors that DOT looks at to make that determination. That is in accordance with federal highway guidelines. We've made that decision in certain cases where the information was available and clear. In the event the permit application is denied, there is an appeal process. Since a permit is denied, the applicant is entitled to a formal contested case procedure under SDCL Chapter 126, an administrative appeal by an independent agency. A decision in that administrative appeal constitutes final agency action, and that can then be appealed if the applicant is still unsatisfied to the circuit court and then go through the judicial system for review as well. Mr. Chairman, we believe this clarification is consistent with the state's and the Federal Highways Administration and the U.S. District Court interpretation of the law, and is, as I expressed, how the state has been applying the law in processing billboard permit applications. Our intent is to simply clarify that matter now. We believe this is an appropriate and helpful clarification, and we respectfully request this committee's favorable action. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and with that, I'll stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Nevin. Further proponents of House Bill 1036. Further proponents of House Bill 1036. Further proponents of House Bill 1036. Last call for proponents of House Bill 1036. Seeing none, we'll move to opponents. Opponents of House Bill 1036. Opponents of House Bill 1036. Last call for opponents of House Bill 1036. Seeing none, we will move to questions by the committee. We only have one person to question at this point. Questions by the committee. Mr. Lucas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Bill, we got a lot of time here this morning. I realize this is just for the permitting process, but just kind of so I get it to my hands wrapped around it. All of our agricultural land would all be considered what, commercial property? Or?
Mr. Chairman, no, Senator Lucas. If it was agricultural land either zoned as agricultural or being actually used for agricultural purposes, it would not be considered commercial or industrial for purposes of billboard permitting.
But then to follow up, if I could, but a person can go and put a billboard up on that property with, you know, in conjunction with the landowner, and that doesn't violate the process then, as long as it's, as long as they got an agreement worked out then.
Mr. Chairman, if I would, no, Senator Lucas, there would actually have to be commercial or industrial uses taking place on that land in order for it to be a permissible billboard
okay.
site.
All right.
Further questions? I have a couple questions. I really appreciate the history. We're going back to 73, and we actually lost a percent of our federal money, and we fought and lost and took to the Supreme Court. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Then, subsequent to that, was there more federal legislation or changes in the regs? My bottom line of my question is, why are we now codifying this now and didn't do it previously?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding and belief is there haven't been any significant substantive changes to the Highway Beautification Act since that time. I believe when South Dakota adopted the law in the attempt to conform to that federal court decision, that the language they used was believed to do that, to accomplish that. And of course, as I indicated, that's how the state has been interpreting it and administering it. And Federal Highway has agreed with that interpretation and administration. However, over the course of the past year, the issue was raised by someone that this was really vague, and their belief was that based on the plain language of that statute, that as long as local zoning authorities acted in accordance with the procedures, the procedures for enacting zoning changes, that that should suffice. And the purpose of this is to just clarify that that's not the end of the question. I mean, you need to look at whether it was done as part of comprehensive zoning or what uses are being made of the land.
So pretty much this bill deals with, if I want to put up a bunch of signs, I go out and declare, ask to have an area rezoned industrial. There's no desire to put a factory out there or commercial to put a strip mall out there, none whatsoever, but I just want to do this so I can put up my signs. That this law then says, no, that's really not correct, and the federal rules would say that's not correct, and we would lose again. Would that be correct?
Mr. Chairman, that would be correct, yes.
And that is the reason we're trying to clarify that today.
That's correct. And, Mr. Chairman, if I might just add one more thing. If monies are withheld as a result of our being not in compliance, that money's gone forever. We don't get it back at any point, even if we were then to change our law to come into conformity with the federal requirements.
There's no nice guy here.
There is none.
Okay. My next question is, there may be some people that feel that that has already happened, that someone, county has rezoned an area just for the aspect of signs, and those signs now are in place. What is the Department of Transportation going to do now that those signs are already up? Are they grandfathered in or are they not? They got so much time. What happens to those signs?
Mr. Chairman, the only signs that are grandfathered in are signs that pre-existed the passage of the Highway Beautification Act that are located in places that are not commercial or industrial. There may have been situations, and would certainly hope not, but there may have been situations where a billboard permit was authorized on a parcel of property that was rezoned commercial or industrial but wasn't really part of comprehensive zoning. And if so, that was a mistake. What we do to try to avoid that kind of issue is we do training for our people. There are numerous federal publications providing guidelines for administering the Highway Beautification Act. And of course, legal counsel at DOT is available at any time for our field folks to run questions by if there seems to be a question as to what's proper or not. So we try not to make those mistakes.
If it, and I'm not trying to dog you here, I'm just trying to get down to the bottom line here. So if someone feels that that is the case, that these signs are not there in a proper manner, what will DOT do then? As I recall, you have certain people in each region, and that person is the sign person, and they go out and look at the signs, make sure they've got the proper registration or whatever you call that, and may have paid the fee up to date. But let's say that someone is contending, we all know why let's just say it happened, why that was rezoned industrial, and there's nothing there but signs. What happens in those cases, Mr. Nevin?
Mr. Chairman, and I'm not absolutely certain, not being directly involved in it, but I do believe that the billboard permits need to be renewed each year. I was looking back at Mr. Seaman to see if he would confirm that for me or not. That the a billboard permit needs to be renewed and a fee paid each year. And that may provide an opportunity to review the situation when they come in for renewal of that permit to make sure that it's an appropriate billboard site.
If I apply for a billboard site and I'm denied, is there a... is that the end of the line, or do I have the ability to do anything else with it? What happens if I say I want to put a sign up here and I get it rezoned and you say no?
Mr. Chairman, in that event, the applicant, you would have an opportunity to file an appeal with the Secretary of the Department of Transportation and ask for a formal administrative hearing, which would be conducted by the Office of Hearing Examiners, I believe, here in the state, independent from the Department of Transportation. That the individual conducting that hearing, that appeal, would then make a determination as to whether or not the permit was properly denied or not. And if the applicant was unhappy with that decision, they could then go into the judicial system, into circuit court, and start the appeal there as well.
Okay. I've probably opened up Pandora's box. It looks like someone, you have a question? Thank you.
Go ahead. Okay, Mr. Nevin, I don't know how to pose my question here. Up in our neighborhood, we had an instance where all of a sudden billboards started showing up in railroad right-of-ways. How does this bill affect that, or does it?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know that this bill would affect that as long as the location were still a lawful billboard site.
Further questions? Senator Lucas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm still a little cloudy on the comprehensive zoning action. If a county zones where they put billboards along the interstate and where you can't, is that going to be okay if it's done in advance?
Mr. Chairman,
please.
Yes, Senator Lucas, that may well be okay. If the county is part of their comprehensive zoning, zoned particular areas as commercial or industrial as part of their comprehensive zoning plan, that would be sufficient.
Mr. Nevin, but if they did that with the intent of signs, that would not be proper. Is that correct?
That is correct.
I think that maybe goes to the root of your question, Senator. Okay. I guess my only last comment is I'm sure you will try and administer this, and I had I don't want to say admonish, but I encourage you to make sure that we're consistent in doing this so that we don't have people saying, how come this and how come that, and they got this and these people did that, so that we're consistent. And I know you will endeavor to do that and make sure that the sign people are trained, because I think some of us have received some calls on this, and basically it appears to be the federal law. So as long as you're going to assure me that you're going to go after it and be consistent, I think that finishes my question.
Mr. Chairman, I certainly would do everything that I can to do that.
All right. Thank you. Seeing no further questions? Questions, Enrado? No further questions? We'll close to public testimony and open it up for discussion and or action. Senator Otten.
Move do pass.
Been moved do pass by Senator Otten.
Second.
Seconded by Senator Krebs. Discussion on that motion. Mr. Otten.
I believe that is just a straightforward bill, and we just need to update.
Further comments?
Yeah.
Senator Monroe.
I'll vote for the bill, but I want to explain why. I wonder why I am. I just always wonder why it's so permissible for a bureaucrat to be sitting in a cubbyhole somewhere in a town far away to be able to sit at a computer and tell state legislatures what they're supposed to do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Amdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I kind of piggyback what Senator Monroe said. You know, some more federal government holding the hammer over our head. I think it's a violation of our First Amendment rights, people's First Amendment rights. It is what it is. I'm not a lawyer, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn one time.
All right. Further comments by the committee? Seeing none, the motion before the floor is a do-pass motion on House Bill 1036. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay.
Senators Krebs?
Aye.
Lucas?
Aye.
Monroe?
Aye.
Amdahl?
Aye.
Otten?
Aye.
Ewing?
Aye.
Valley?
Aye.
Seven ayes.
House Bill 1036 has received a unanimous vote of the committee.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ewing.
I beat you to it. Consent, please.
Senator Ewing has moved consent, seconded by Senator Krebs. Those in favor of putting the bill on the consent calendar, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The House Bill 1036 will move to the floor on the consent calendar. The next bill up is House Bill 1042. It's a bill to revise the payment of additional registration tax on aircraft. Welcome, Mr. Nevin. Introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bill Nevin, Department of Transportation. There is imposed upon aircraft registered in this state an original registration tax of 4% of the purchase price. A rate of 3% is imposed as the original registration tax on aircraft manufactured and used exclusively in agricultural production. The concept is similar to the excise tax that's imposed when a new motor vehicle is registered and titled in this state. The failure to register an aircraft and pay the registration tax within 30 days after an aircraft is first operated in this state is a Class 1 misdemeanor, carrying a penalty of up to a year in jail and a $2,000 fine. In addition to that criminal penalty, the failure to register and pay the original registration tax within 90 days results in a penalty of 10% of the amount of the tax due for each month or portion of the month until that tax is paid, up to a maximum penalty of twice the amount of the tax due. For example, on a $3 million aircraft, that would create an original registration tax due of $120,000. If not paid within 90 days, a penalty of $12,000 per month is imposed every month or portion of month until the late tax is paid in full, or until the penalty reaches $240,000. That's in addition to the $120,000 actual tax. In comparison, the original registration of a mobile or manufactured home is similarly required within 30 days. If not timely registered, the penalty is $1 a week for the first 25 weeks. If the owner's 26 weeks late or more, that penalty is a flat $50. And if you apply for a title beyond that 30 days, it's a class 2 misdemeanor with only 30-day max jail and $500 fine. Likewise, motor vehicles are required to be registered and titled within 30 days after assignment of their certificate of title or the manufacturer's certificate of origin. And if not, the late registration penalty is $1 per week for the first 25 weeks and a flat $50 if 26 weeks or more late. In addition, if not registered and titled within 90 days after being acquired, it's a class 2 misdemeanor again. Of course, at the time of registration and titling of a motor vehicle, the excise tax is due on the purchase price, but the late penalty, registration penalty, is not based on the amount of the excise tax due, as is the case only for aircraft registration. In the four-year period from 2010 to 2013, a total of 345 aircraft were registered in this state, and they paid a total of $4,472,691.19 in that 4% original registration tax. Of those 345 aircraft, seven owed the penalty for late registration payment. Those seven paid a combined penalty amount of $487,593.70. One owner of an aircraft that was registered late owed $97,400 for the tax and wound up paying a late registration penalty of $194,800, twice the amount of the actual tax that was due. So instead of paying $97,400, that owner paid $292,200. The purpose of this bill is to provide a less punitive treatment of late registration of an aircraft in South Dakota, a penalty much less skewed from the penalty that's imposed for late registration of other titled motor vehicle or other titled vehicles. The effect of this bill is to amend SDCL 50-11-19 to reduce the criminal penalty from a Class 1 to a Class 2 offense, as it is for other titled vehicles, and to reduce the monetary penalty from 10% per month up to twice the amount of the tax due to 0.5% per month or up to 5% of the tax due. As the bill was originally proposed, it lowered that tax from 10% a month to 1% a month up to a total of 10% of the tax due. However, the bill was amended in the House committee to the 0.5% a month up to a maximum of 5% of the tax due. That being said, I'm not aware of anyone ever being prosecuted for an offense like this, much less being sentenced to any jail time. Using the example of that $3 million aircraft, the monetary penalty would be reduced from $12,000 a month up to a maximum of $240,000 to $600 a month, or 0.5%, up to a maximum of $6,000 or 5% of the tax due for the late registration penalty. We believe this change is a matter of fairness, and we respectfully request the committee's favorable consideration of House Bill 1042. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stand by for any questions.
Further proponents of House Bill 1042. Further proponents of House Bill 1042. Last call for further proponents of House Bill 1042. We'll move to opponents. Opponents of House Bill 1042. Opponents of House Bill 1042. Last call for opponents of House Bill 1042. At this point, we'll open it up to questions by the committee. Senator Lucas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, Bill, are you more favorable of the original version where the penalty would have been no more than 10% or the fact that the House amended it down to 5%?
Mr. Chairman, the department has no objection to the action taken to reduce the penalty further.
Senator Krebs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bill, tell me, is there any type of notification that is provided to the owners of these aircraft for their late? I mean, obviously, when they get the registration or when they purchase the vehicle, I'm assuming they, or the plane, they know that. But what type of notification is provided for them?
Mr. Chairman, if I might. I don't know that there's any. Until they come in to register the vehicle, we wouldn't have any reason for knowing that there's a new aircraft to be registered.
Senator Amdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Lambent, I was wondering if you could tell me how, we'll say, the licensing fees compare on aircraft in South Dakota compared to our neighboring states. I guess the reason I'm wondering is, kind of like RVs, et cetera, are we losing out on revenues?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Amdahl, the states are all over the board, and there's a number of different taxing schemes that they use. Some impose actual sales tax. Some have an excise tax. The amounts vary. The amount in South Dakota is roughly in the middle of the pack, I guess I would say.
Further questions by the committee? Could you explain how you find out if someone has a plane here and all of a sudden find out that they didn't have it registered? Can you help us there?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure that I can. There isn't any specific mechanism enabling us to do that. It's just that it may come to our attention, however it might come to our attention, that there's an aircraft being operated in the state that hasn't been registered.
Is there a national registry that you're aware of?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. All right. Further questions by the committee? Senator Krebs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One more follow-up, Mr. Nevin. The registration fee is 4% for all other planes and then 3% for agriculture. Is that correct? I just want to clarify that.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Krebs, that is correct.
Any further questions by the committee? Seeing none, we'll close the questions and Senator Krebs, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry about that. They have the initial registration fee, and then is there any other annual fees from there since that? I mean, obviously, there's probably an inspections and then notification of inspections, and that's a whole other story, but just clarify that.
Mr. Chairman,
please.
Yes, Senator Krebs, there is an annual registration just like for motor vehicles.
Okay. Just a question then, if you don't make the original registration, then do you miss out on making the yearly ones? Is that generally what happens then because you didn't do it originally so people don't know that you're out there?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that is correct. That's what has happened, yes.
Okay. Thank you. Seeing no further questions, we'll close to public testimony and open it up for discussion and or action.
Chairman, I move.
Senator Monroe.
I move do pass.
Been moved do pass by Senator Monroe, seconded by Senator Krebs. Comments on that motion, Senator Monroe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have personal experience, not with my airplane because I don't have one, but, I do have one. Little one in a living room for my grandkids, but I had a call from another district, and the person had a $1,200 sales tax or on his plane, and he was about 6 months later, whatever. Pretty soon, his bill was like $4,000 or $4,500, and this really is a high tax right now. And I really appreciate him bringing this bill forward, and a lot of people will too. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Amdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As a former pilot, I look at what you have to be aware of in federal air regs, everything from an airworthy certificate to registration, kind of the check-off you need before you fly. It's an expensive occupation or hobby, and so anything we can do to reduce that promote more general aviation, I support that. So I think this is good. Thank you.
For the comments. Well, I'll just make a general comment. You know, if we don't register our vehicle, the highway patrolman, when he's following us, he can see that on the license plate. There's not many highway patrolmen up in the air following close enough to be able to tell if you have a license tag hanging on your airplane, obviously. So it does make it somewhat different or difficult. I do believe there is a national registration, and that may be how the department goes about. I believe, I'm not sure, and checking where the planes are at, and they may be able to check that and see if there's one in South Dakota and then check further. But it isn't like our license plates that are hanging on the front and the back of the vehicle. You don't have one spinning on the prop. So with that, it's been moved and seconded for a motion to pass House Bill 1042. Secretary, please call the roll. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay.
Senators Krebs?
Aye.
Lucas?
Aye.
Monroe?
Aye.
Omdahl?
Aye.
Otten?
Aye.
Ewing?
Aye.
Thalley?
Aye.
Seven ayes.
House Bill 1042 has received a majority vote by the committee and will move to the floor. Senator Omdahl.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I move consent.
Second.
It's been moved by Senator Omdahl, seconded by Senator Krebs to move House Bill 1042 to the floor on the consent calendar. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. House Bill 1042 goes to the floor on the consent calendar. We next move to House Bill 1090. Those people in favor of House Bill 1090, please come forward and make your presentation. Introduce yourself to the committee and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Todd Seaman with the Department of Transportation. We're going to give Bill a break this morning. I take the very significant legislation before you. House Bill 1090 arises from the Governor's Red Tape Initiative. Part of that initiative is to review statutes that have been on the books for over 50 years and remained unchanged. The goal is to see if those statutes are necessary and appropriate or outdated and can be repealed. House Bill 1090 proposes to repeal, the statutes House Bill 1090 proposes to repeal clearly meet the criteria for outdated and unnecessary. The particular statutes in House Bill 1090 date from 1923, 91 years ago, when counties acquired right-of-way, built and maintained state highways as well as their own county roads. At that time, state gas tax actually was given to the counties for the purpose of building state highways. The legislature did not give the Department of Transportation authority to obtain right-of-way until the 1940s. Section 1 of the bill directed that the county highway superintendent is in charge of all road construction county in the counties and for the county construction of county roads and state highways. And the Board of Commissioners, Section 1 of the bill directed that the county highway superintendent is in charge of all road construction and maintenance in the county subject to approval of the Board of Commissioners. And in case of a dispute between the two, the Transportation Commission was the deciding body. Today, the state highways are not the responsibility of the counties. The Transportation Commission is not and should not be involved in decisions concerning the county's highway system. The remaining sections of House Bill 1090 proposed to repeal the procedure to be followed by counties when the state ordered the county to acquire right-of-way for construction of state highways. Of course, none of that is done today. The state, through the Department of Transportation, acquires its own right-of-way in accordance with other statutes prescribing the procedure to do so. The statutes addressed in House Bill 1090 are outdated, unnecessary, and should be repealed. These statutes are simply taking up space in the statute books, and we ask for your support in passage of House Bill 1090. I would stand by for questions.
Thank you. Further proponents of House Bill 1090? Further proponents of House Bill 1090? Last call for proponents of House Bill 1090. We will move to opponents. Opponents of House Bill 1090. Opponents of House Bill 1090. Last call for opponents of House Bill 1090. Seeing none, we'll open up for questions. Questions on House Bill 1090. I have one question. We're not going to let you the first time before the committee get up here and not have a question. Golly, that just wouldn't be fair.
That's what Secretary Burke was told me. You have at least one question.
I kind of read through these, and as I'm doing that, I'm going, this doesn't fit. Why do we wait? I mean, if we've county highway superintendents that don't have jurisdiction over state roads now, why haven't when 1940 or whenever we changed that and the state took, why have we waited till 2014 to say, golly? I mean, if I was a state superintendent, I could say, by golly, I'm going to go out and clean that road. I'm going to go out and patch that road.
Well, and we would probably let him. Oh, excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Clearly, it seems interesting that in the 40s, when the legislature gave approval, gave the Department of Transportation the authority to obtain right-of-way, that these statutes weren't repealed at that time. But I have no reason, I have no background on why that wasn't changed then.
Okay. Well, I would suggest to you and all other agencies that when we pass a new one, that we go back and kind of do a search here and say which ones we need to take off, because we could get into a trouble at that point. So anyway, further questions by the committee? All right. Thank you. Thank you for the first time testifying. We didn't beat up on you too bad. All right. Seeing no further questions, we'll close it to public testimony and open it up for committee discussion and or action. Senator Ewing.
I would make a motion for due pass on Senate Bill 1090.
Second. It's been moved due pass by Senator Ewing on House Bill 1090 and seconded by Senator Omdahl. Discussion on that motion, Mr. Ewing.
No, I think it's well overdue. It's a good bill.
Further discussion? Senator Omdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I think I want to comment that I think Mr. Seaman did a good job. I couldn't help but think he was a gravel checker back when I was a project engineer with the state. So you did a good job, Todd.
Okay. Was all your gravel good?
It was good. He did a good job.
All right. At this point, further discussion on the motion. The motion before us is a motion do pass on House Bill 1090. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. The secretary will please call the roll.
Senators Krebs.
Aye.
Lucas.
Aye.
Monroe.
Aye.
Omdahl.
Aye.
Otten.
Aye.
Ewing.
Aye.
Valley.
Aye.
Seven ayes.
House Bill 1090 has received a majority vote of the committee.
Move to put on consent.
And Senator Otten has moved that we move this to the consent calendar.
Second.
And been seconded by Senator Krebs. Those in favor of moving House Bill 1090 to the consent calendar, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. House Bill 1090 moves to the Senate floor on the consent calendar. Okay, before we go any further, we will award all three bills to Mr. Lucas for the Democrat caucus. And since they're on the consent calendar for the Republican caucus, I'm going to assign Ewing to 1090, Omdahl to 1042, and Krebs to 1036, unless there is an objection. Seeing no objection. further comments, further pertinent comments by the committee. We will have at least two bills. I think there is a third one that snuck in on us. We'll check and see what that is and see if we're going to take them all up on Tuesday. Look at the time. If there seem to be relatively simple bills, we may wait till 8:30 or 9. I'll take a look at them. We may be going late on Monday and Tuesday, depending upon, because this is crossover day, so we'll just have to see how the evenings go. So I'll take a look at that. With that, seeing nothing else to come before the committee, the chair would entertain a motion for adjournment. Moved by Senator Krebs, seconded by Senator Monroe. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Meeting is adjourned.